Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Tim Gatman, Jeff Baker, James Konacek, Jonathan Watkins, David Coyne, Christopher Grayville, Joe Brack, Mort Shelby, Johan Detweiler, Chris Rowan, Dylan Lynch, and MB Van Dorn. Deathlands number 41, Freedom Lost. The two men were locked in a two-step, supporting each other as they stumbled across the arid landscape. Above their heads, the wild sky was a deep, striking blue, without a single cloud hanging in place to battle back the hot sunlight. There were no hills or mountains around. Flat, broken highway, six lanes of highway, stretched out as far as the eye could see. Pieces of broken pavement and scraps of long-dead automobiles littering the roadway kept tripping up the two exhausted men as they picked their way northward along the abandoned stretch of road. Once the highway had been known as Interstate 77. Now it was just another broken, forgotten road, one of thousands that still crisscrossed the former United States of America. Far behind the men, long hot miles back down the interstate and directly off an exit ramp near the remains of a single ruined overpass were the burned and crumbling remains of the play palace and amusement park that had been known to many as Willieville. But it had an earlier incarnation meaningful to good Christian soldiers as Freedom City, USA. Before the darkness fell across the world, the site had been a queer mix of Bible-thumping religion and overblown Vegas-style entertainment. The crown jewel of the attraction was a sparkling, modern 24-story hotel with all of the amenities, including a private, hidden casino in the basement for those very special guests of the Lord. Freedom City, USA was also equipped with an amusement park for children, a fully functioning television studio with satellite hookup and live feed, a radio station broadcasting on both AM and FM wave bands, private quarters for the staff and employees, and an 18-hole golf course with special tee-off spots for senior citizens. All of these diversions were offered for free to select members of the church group who sponsored the dream of the compound's owner and president. The master of Freedom City was a born-again showman, promoting his land of fun through publishing and radio, but primarily via cable TV, with regular appeals for money to help do the Lord's work. He claimed to be able to produce miracles, healing the sick on a daily basis. The lame threw down their crutches. The ones committed for life to wheelchairs stood up and danced. The blind were made to see. The men, women, and children who held their diseases close, hidden in their bodies as cancer tumors, were made whole and well again. These acts were performed live with a very special hand-picked studio audience who got to enjoy the pleasures of Freedom City after their television debuts. And for the poor souls unable to travel, they too were offered salvation by pressing their hands up against their TV screens at home and told to channel their energies through the very lines of fiber optic cable carrying the broadcast signal into their neighborhoods. The Lord had chosen to respond to all of these good works done in His name by allowing the miracle-producing head of the church and Freedom City complex to be exposed as a lecherous and greedy little troll who wept like a baby once his sins became public. Once the word was out that their leader, the good married reverend himself, had been discovered in a bedroom of one of the hundreds of hotel rooms housed in the 24-story crown jewel of his empire, with two women half his age, the holding corporation for the entire kingdom had been plunged into a non-ending series of investigations and exposés. All of the media attention culminated in the leader's imprisonment, bankruptcy, and ruin. The dream was over. The park was closed. The golf course was padlocked shut. The hotel was turned over to private enterprise, rented a few times a year for business conventions. Then, less than a decade or so later, the literal end of the world the former Baptist millionaire had promised for so long finally did happen. When it did, concepts such as religions and corporations and inventions such as television were utterly, completely moot. Over 100 years later, Freedom City, USA had become a vill run by a man with an iron fist and a hand-picked team of security men. At first, the area was under the command of one Baron George Frederick Sokolow. Sokolow was a brutal man, but trusting and fair. His successor, by way of betrayal, had been one Baron William Elijah. Unfortunately for Freedom City, USA, the good and proper biblical name of Elijah was not chosen as the site's new appellation. The name of the place became Willieville. Now, all gone, Freedom City had died thrice. The first time had left the structures intact, with the soul removed. The second had seen all around it fall into waste and ruin. The third found it blown into bits and burned to the ground, overrun and destroyed by legions of muties. The two figures fleeing from Willieville kept moving. To their right, skeletal skyscrapers of the city known as Charlotte towered high, but the city and its artificial canyons lined with sidewalks and parking meters wasn't their destination. The taller man looked dolefully at his companion.
We there yet?
The taller, long-haired figure wore a pair of amber aviator's glasses with thin metal frames of gold.
What do you think? Look around, Stoop. We're not even past Charlotte yet. I sure as hell don't want to go in there. I hear there's patches of hot, rad spots.
The shorter of the pair was hairless, and his scalp was a mix of bright red new skin intermingled with blackened scabs and old scar tissue. His taller companion had enough shaggy brown hair running down from above a lean, hairless forehead to the nape of a narrow back to provide ample tresses for each of them. Both of them were wearing sunglasses. The bald one with the ugly head had a pair of black knockoff Ray-Ban eyewear in the classic boxy style of the 1950s. A semi-competent sec man and hired mercy by trade, he'd been unlucky enough to rouse the ire of the now-deceased Baron Willie Elijah, and on the day the ville was blasted into ruin, he'd been strapped with other unfortunates to a great wheel used to raise and lower the elevator car that traveled between floors of the 24-story hotel, jutting from the center of the Baron's ville. Unfortunately for those who manned the elevator wheel, the Baron had chosen the penthouse as the roost of his domain, where he could look out on all that was his and rest assured it was good. This area was also home to his family and followers, as well as where many of his sec men stayed, those who hadn't incurred his wrath and been banished to the wheel. All of them and more had been up there on top of the world the day Willieville began to die. There had been an explosion within the upper floors of the former Pleasure Palace, and the elevator car, full to overflowing with panicked men and women, had come crashing down at a terrific rate. The wheel that the slaves had been strapped to spun faster and faster, whipping them around like insects struggling to keep their footing on a traveling vehicle. Under the sounds of the explosions and screams came the sickening snaps of breaking bones and the haunting noise of naked flesh being ripped open and torn apart. Then there were more blasts of horrific intensity, followed by fire as the entire 24 floors of the hotel came tumbling down into the basement. The two men, now leaning woozily on each other for support, had been among the few survivors from the devastation in Baron Willie's headquarters. In the instance of the man wearing the Ray-Ban sunglasses, the end result created by the flames was a scarred visage that suggested the after effect of a novelty wax head placed within a microwave oven. Flesh had bubbled and melted. The forehead was slashed with still-healing wounds and bits of black shrapnel that had yet to work themselves out of the skin. No eyebrows were above the currently hidden eyes, but one eyeball was wide open, glaring and minus an eyelid. The other eye was half-closed in a mess of scarring. His nose was partly smashed, and his breathing labored. The fire had also claimed the man's ears. He fell to his knees. The second figure placed a hand on his fallen friend's shoulder and waited silently. The placed hand was strange, inhuman, dirty, and wrong. The fingers looked as though they had an extra joint between the mid-bend and the knuckle, and indeed they were so equipped. The fingers also came with two additional bonuses, a multitude of tiny suckers, each little mouth capable of sticking to almost any chosen surface, and a thin secretion of bioproduced adhesive. The hand was the first clue in separating the pair, for the man on the ground, despite his horrific injuries, was a human, a norm by birth, now a freak by accident, and lucky to be alive. The standing figure behind him was a mutant, and there would be no changing that birthright. The mutie was commonly called a sticky due to the suctioning fingers, which could tear flesh off bone. Stickies had the same suckers on their long tongues as well. There were also other ways of identifying a sticky. Their speech patterns were usually slow and monosyllabic. Many times their teeth were sharp, both by nature and because stickies enjoyed filing their teeth down into needles for shock value. And many had the unusual trait of being born without any ears, so their hearing was limited, making them seem even slower and dumber to a human foe. The lack of ears also forced most stickies to be loud talkers, making them seem even more annoying to all except for their own kind. There were two kinds of stickies. The one in the aviator's glasses was the more intelligent kind. A second breed of sticky came with very little in the upstairs attic, no body hair, and suckers on their feet. Also on the hands and feet of these murderous unfortunates were highly developed sucker pads instead of fingers and toes, the digits exuding a gelatinous ooze even more adhering than the secretion characteristic of their brighter kin.
How much longer?
I don't know. We're heading north, so I know by the sun we're going in the right direction. I couldn't begin to tell you what kind of time we're making. We're killing ourselves now. We haven't gone near far enough. Trip's gonna take weeks on foot in the condition we're both in. Maybe months. Unless we find some kind of wag or horse.
The listening sticky used its other hand to adjust the cap it was wearing. The letters PTL were stitched in yellow on the blue hat, a souvenir of time spent in servitude in Willyville. The creature had no idea what the initial stood for, nor did it care since it couldn't read anyway. The hat had three things in its favor. It fit snugly over long hair, it wasn't filthy like the rest of the sticky's clothing, and the wide brim kept the sun off its pale face.
No wags here, Norm!
The mutie's shaded eyes surveyed the surrounding landscape, littered with the stripped frames of abandoned automobiles.
Don't call me that! I'm not a Norm. I'm no longer a man. I'm one of you now. A filthy, stinking beauty.
You want me to call you Lester?
Hell no.
That was your name?
Not anymore. Forget you ever heard it.
Have to call you something.
Shut up, okay? Just shut up and keep walking. Let's see if we can make that tractor trailer rig up there. I could use it to camp in tonight.
Whatever you say, Norm. Whatever you say.
The sticky reached down and offered a helping hand. The newly christened Norm knocked the assistance away and awkwardly got to his feet on his own.
Fuck you, beauty.
I am Bud. Saved you, Norm. Has saved your life.
Can't say I'm grateful, you ugly prick. Did I ever say thank you? Can't remember that I did. Wish you'd let me finish burning like a candle in that shithole.
We need each other.
Yeah, you told me. Word got out before everything back at the Ville went to hell, didn't it? About the western part of Carolina crawling with muties. fucking Lord K.